rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman radio program, also filling in for Al Franken. Greetings, by the way, to our newest affiliate, KTRC, in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And welcome to the program. Global warming. What's the story with that? We're going to get into that with Mark Morano in just a minute. Our telephone number, by the way, for the program, 1-866-440-THOM. 866-440-8466. And TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room and say hi to some of the finest minds on the Internet. Yesterday, George W. Bush gave a press conference, and in this press conference, a couple of interesting things happened, and I want to get into them more as we go on through the program. But one thing that really struck me is this is a guy who either has or is trying to inflict on the American people, and I think, frankly, he has post-traumatic stress disorder as a consequence of 9/11. He is still living, you know, with PTSD. People, the stress doesn't go away. Every single day they wake up, and it's as if whatever the horrible event was, it happened that day. Here's George W. Bush from his press conference.
It's the calling of our time, Cheryl, and I firmly believe it is necessary. And I believe the next president, whoever the person is, will have the same charge, the same obligations to deal with terrorists so they don't hurt us.
You hear that? To deal with terrorists so they don't hurt us. And I, you know, I'm really concerned about that. And in fact, Joe Scarborough on his program last night, he was talking to Mike Barnicle, and they're discussing literally the mental health. Now, Joe Scarborough, Republican congressman from Florida, left office after a dead woman was found in his office, but, you know, back during the Gingrich time, has successfully reinvented himself as a TV commentator, does a pretty good job of it. But, you know, a conservative Republican who aggressively supported on the air Bush for both presidential elections and aggressively supported the war. And here he is talking to Mike Barnicle, the columnist, kind of a middle-of-the-road columnist for the Boston Globe, as I recall. I may be wrong. But just listen to this interchange. This is spooky. This is what's happening in the mainstream media, being, by and large, the voice of corporate America and the right wing.
Mike Barnicle, as you know, I supported this war, and I supported this man twice for president, yet I'm growing more disturbed every night by how isolated George W. Bush has become. All the Joint Chiefs oppose his plan for Iraq. His lead general opposes his plan in Iraq, and now he's going to quit because Bush has ignored him. Colin Powell opposes his plan in Iraq, and an L.A. Times poll is showing that only 12% of Americans support his plan for more troops in Iraq. Shouldn't more Americans be disturbed at this unprecedented example of a White House that's in, and you can only call it this, a bunker mentality?
So there's the setup. Joe Scarborough, you know, the White House is in a bunker mentality. Is George Bush living in a bubble? And Mike Barnicle just lays it out.
Well, I think, Joe, that more Americans ought to be truly depressed by what they saw today on TV, the latest press conference. We have a president of the United States who is isolated. He's delusional. He is stubborn.
Wait a minute. Delusional? Delusional is, this is a lot of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, the DSM-4R, delusional. This is an aspect of one of several actual, certifiable, real mental illnesses. You don't use the word delusional just like, you know, offhand, like the way that Gordon Smith used the word criminal the other day.
He has had one intervention that clearly didn't work, the Baker-Hamilton report.
An intervention? You do interventions with people who are mentally ill or people who are in severe crisis, who are, for example, alcohol and drug addicts. An intervention?
He is clearly in need of another intervention. You don't have to be von Clausewitz to figure out that urban warfare in the city of Baghdad, comparably the size of New York City, a tremendously hostile environment now, will become even more hostile with the introduction of more American troops.
Now, that's a very good point, by the way. I mean, you got Baghdad the size of New York City, and you're going to throw, what, 30,000 troops? How many cops are there in New York City? And how many would it take to button down New York City if the If the whole thing just, I'm sorry, a window just popped up at me. And how many would it take to button down New York City if the entire city was to melt down? What if all the people of New York City decided to rise up and fight against it? I mean, you couldn't do it. So anyhow, here's Mike Barnicle continues.
It will do very little, if nothing, to lessen the level of violence. And
then Joe Scarborough interrupts him, and Barnicle wraps this thing. This is spooky.
Baghdad, the only services.
And you're just going to get more. You're only going to get more American kids killed. And
Joe, you're going to get more Americans both killed and captured. And the only services that we will have ended up improving in Baghdad are funeral services.
Is George W. Bush delusional? Is he mentally ill? You got Justin Frank out there, and I mean this not in a, you know, hey, let's kick around George way. This is something that we should be concerned about as American citizens. You have a president with a 12% approval rating, who I really and truly believe, there is an absolute internal consistency in what he's saying. I really believe that he believes his own PR, and he believes his own press, he believes his own statements. Here we have a president with a 12% approval rating. His generals are deserting him. I mean, they are fleeing. They are like, you know, we're out of here. The Joint Chiefs are leaking information about how, you know, they're not on board for this thing. I mean, what kind of a disaster is this? And George Bush says he has no regrets. He hasn't even considered the issue.
No, I haven't questioned whether or not it was right to take Saddam Hussein out, nor have I questioned the necessity for the American people. I mean, I've questioned it. I've come to the conclusion it's the right decision. But I also know it's the right decision for America to stay engaged and to take the lead and to deal with these radicals and extremists.
Now, to take the lead in what? I mean, Iraq is not the war on terror. Well, to the extent that there is a war on terror, Iraq is not the war against Osama bin Laden and his little merry band of al-Qaeda. That is not Iraq. It never was. And for that matter, we let Osama bin Laden go. I mean, arguably, the cut and run happened when we cut and run at Tora Bora and let Osama bin Laden go to Pakistan. Bush continues.
And to help support young democracies. It's the calling of our time, Cheryl. And I firmly believe it is necessary. And I believe the next president, whoever the person is, will have the same charge, the same obligations to deal with terrorists so they don't hurt us.
Yeah, see, there it is. The clip that I started out with, only in a larger context here. I'm telling you, there is an internal consistency here to this. This guy lives in a very terrified world.
And to help young democracy survive the threats of radicalism and extremism. It's in our nation's interest to do so. But the most painful aspect of the presidency is the fact that I know my decisions have caused young men and women to lose their lives.
Now, I consider that to be a startling admission. But just listen to the tonality of this. Just listen to the tonality of this. There's something going on here.
And to help young democracy survive the threats of radicalism and extremism, it's in our nation's interest to do so. But the most painful.
Yeah, and it's just I am frankly very concerned about it. And when I hear people like Joe Scarborough, a good Republican, a Republican congressman, a partisan Republican, a Republican who's been out there for a long, long time, standing up and speaking out and saying, hey, wait a minute, no, we've got a problem. And then Bush comes along and says, well, you know, we do have a solution to the problem.
As we work with Congress in the coming year to chart a new course in Iraq and strengthen our military to meet the challenges of the 21st century, we must also work together to achieve important goals for the American people here at home. This work begins with keeping our economy growing. And I encourage you all to go shopping more.
You'll recall right after 9/11, it was go shopping more. So, let's see. We have Americans who last year went into debt to go shopping more. For the first time since the Great Depression, we had net negative savings. That is, people borrowed against their homes, they borrowed against their credit cards beyond their income to buy things. We are shopping ourselves into debt. Not a healthy sign. Not a healthy thing for our country. Not a healthy thing for individual families. And yet that is the only solution. And in the process, by the way, we're buying all this stuff from China and from other countries that is dramatically increasing our balance of trade deficit, our trade deficit, and thus putting us at the mercy of these other countries, where their people are coming in and buying up our country. I'm just very concerned. I am inclined to agree with Mike Barnicle and Joe Scarborough that this actually is delusional behavior, and we as a people should be concerned about that. Speaking of delusional behavior, let's talk about global warming with Mark Morano. Maybe he'll think I'm delusional. Right after the break, 16 minutes past the hour.
While hours away, Tom will play on Air America Radio.
I am the hoss, and I'm shopping for a trailer and another new gun. I'm a Republican now. Criticism is swept. I'm a Republican now. And nobody checks. I'm a Republican now.
We still ain't having no sex.
I'm holier than now. I'm a Republican now.
And welcome back. A place where being progressive never felt so good. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Mark Morano's with us. He's the communications director for the U.S. Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works, dealing with environmental issues, also known as James Inhofe's private kingdom. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on. This is the waning days of the GOP majority. In fact, tomorrow is going to be our last official day here, so the Democrats come back after New Year. So you're making history on radio today.
Okay, but you're still going to be there, right?
Yeah, we're going to be, Inhofe will be the ranking member, the go-to opposition for Senator Barbara Boxer as she takes over the committee.
Cool.
So I won't be going away.
You and I can still mix this stuff up.
Yes, absolutely.
All righty. Scare tactics should not drive public policy. This is what Senator Inhofe says. Scare tactics should not drive public policy. He also says that God is still with us, and therefore we shouldn't worry about global warming. Should I be worried about people who talk like that?
No, why would you be worried about that? That's Senator Inhofe's personal belief in God he's expressing.
Should we be doing public policy based on the assumption that God is going to fix the global warming problem?
He's using God for natural climate variability. Are you familiar with the Roman warming period, the medieval warming period?
I am, and none of them were like now. None of them were the consequence of carbon dioxide levels being at where they are now, and at no time since this, in millions of years, have carbon dioxide levels been where they are? Not since the Carboniferous period. I mean, we're going back 300 million years.
Well, there have been past periods where carbon dioxide was higher than today, and temperatures were cooler.
Yes, 300 million years ago.
Right. But my point is,
it was not an environment conducive to human beings.
Cooler, and we actually had a couple scientists here, and they were testifying to the fact that CO2 levels actually follow increased temperatures on some of these things. Now, one of the issues here that your listeners, Air America listeners, need to know, Al Franken listeners, Tom Hartman listeners, the UN just downgraded man's role in climate change by 25%. They've also came out and said that emissions from cows are more damaging to the earth than CO2 from cars. These are the kind of things that Air America listeners need to understand, that even the UN now is backing off some of this alarmism, the alarmism of Al Gore, the alarmism of the media darling James Hansen. It's crumbling. It's back in the late 70s. The coming ice age scares started to crumble the same way. A 25% reduction here, another 10% reduction here, and eventually they're on to another environmental scare.
I'm not buying it, Mark. I'm sorry. Cow farts? No, then
you have a problem with the UN report. It's cattle. We need a Kyoto Protocol for cows. If you read this UN report,
reading those reports for some time that say that factory farming is producing large amounts of methane,
yeah,
and that is a problem.
Because
methane is a greenhouse gas. So maybe we should reconsider our factory farming methods. Which is equal interest. So now you have two industries that can be tossing you guys money: the oil industry and the factory farming industry.
Oh, if you do a comparison of money, are you kidding? The paltry $19 million that some senators have wrote about that ExxonMobil gave compared to what the environmental alarmists have, everyone from Richard Branson's $3 billion to the Sierra Club's
ExxonMobil gave you guys $19 million bucks?
That's over since the 1990s. That's all anyone could come up with. That's the worst of the critics could come up with. And as I've told you before, when Inhofe asked how much money he gets from oil and gas industry, his answer is not enough. When you consider how much the environmental alarmists and the environmental industry, if you will, big business gives in all the, with all their slick lobbyists on Capitol Hill. So don't play that game about the oil, the evil oil industry.
So you don't think that the oil industry should bear any responsibility for the externality,
you know,
of their product? For the impact of climate.
Think of a carbon-based economy. It's been the greatest liberator of mankind in the history of our planet.
Then why don't we have a carbon-based tax system?
We've increased life expectancy. You've increased public health, lowered infant mortality. You brought in modern world. And the biggest threat the developing world faces is not climate change. It's Kyoto-style limits on their development. People living in dung.
No, I'd say the biggest threat to the world is a third of the planet's species gone, and maybe as many as half of the planet's species gone within the next 30 years. We're seeing an extinction happening here as a consequence of this carbon-based economy.
That is one of those things. That's Edward O. Wilson. 50,000 species go extinct every year. They can't name any of these so-called species. It turns out a lot of them are just bacteria.
The fact of the matter is fewer than 2% of all species have been named.
You know, 99% of all species on the Earth have gone extinct. I mean, this is not a
At some point over the last 5 billion years.
Extinction is a natural process, first of all. And we're not calling for paving the Earth. We're calling for rational, science-based policy here. And it's talking about an anti-human agenda, as I was trying to
say. But how can you have a science-based policy when you say, don't worry, God's going to take care of it?
Who said God's name? He just said that
James Inhofe.
Read
your
the
boss.
Quote. He said God's still up there, meaning that natural climate variability happens. And there's new reports out. There's been hundreds of papers before the
so it's God who's doing this.
Talking about the medieval warm period being warmer than today. The hockey stick, which the UN promoted in 2001, completely wiped away hundreds of peer-reviewed studies that showed the medieval warm period warmer. Now, that's called natural climate variability.
But the medieval warming period was not warmer than today.
The medieval warm period was warmer than today by many scientists. What I'm trying to tell you is the UN...
By a few oil industry-funded scientists.
A few oil industry-funded... I mean, no, it's called hundreds of scientists before that. The UN itself used to acknowledge that before.
Okay.
The hockey stick came.
Mark Morano, people can read all about it over at epw.senate.gov.
And we have a new skeptic's guide to global warming alarmism at our website. It's publicly available, 68-page, color glossy.
Cool. People can check it out. epw.senate.gov. Mark Morano, thanks for being with
us. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Good talking with you. 7 minutes past the hour.
Mama got run over by a reindeer right outside his cave on Christmas Eve. Some folks say there's no such thing as Santa, but now even the Taliban believe. Osama thought we'd never find him, but even little children know Santa knows who's been real naughty in those hard Afghani mountains capped with snow.
Yes, and
Al-Qaeda found
Mr. Osama, where might he be? Well, you know, the decider.
So I hear the voices, and I read the front page, and I know the speculation, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best.
And
So I don't know where he is. Nor, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him. Really, to be honest with you, again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
Yeah. So, this confluence of denial of global warming. In fact, there's some discussion about whether global warming deniers. I should have brought this up with Mark. I will the next time we get him on. Whether global warming deniers should be put in a category with Holocaust deniers, given that some are predicting that global warming will kill hundreds of millions of people and is already killing millions of people because of the traveling of diseases into areas that they previously didn't exist in, and parasites and the moving of animals, vegetation, and whatnot. And the Bush response to this, the Bush government response to this, Philip Cooney, for example, chief of staff, the White House Council on Environmental Quality, he altered a report. This is from the Legal Times, by the way. Altered a report on climate change to inject scientific uncertainty where none existed. For example, he turned the phrase, quote, Earth is undergoing a period of rapid change into, quote, Earth may be undergoing a period of rapid change. He also inserted the following italicized language. The role for the U.S. Climate Change Research Institute is to reduce the significant remaining uncertainties associated with human-induced climate change and facilitate full use of the scientific information in policy and decision-making in response strategies. He cut out the significant remaining uncertainties. I mean, who is this guy? Well, he was a lobbyist for the American Petroleum Institute. Mr. Cooney, Philip Cooney, is a lawyer with no scientific training. And last year, when he got outed for rewriting these reports at the White House Council on Environmental Quality as being an American Petroleum Institute lobbyist, he left government to work for ExxonMobil. So here we have this very bizarre pattern of denial of reality, whether it's in Iraq or whether it's with regard to global warming, of denial of reality of really big issues. I mean, this is not political gotcha. This isn't my side versus your side. This isn't, you know, hey, it's Democrats versus Republicans and all that. This isn't sports. I'm sorry. This is not sports. This is life and death. We need to be, each one of us, we need to be speaking on behalf of life on this planet. And it has to be all life on this planet, because we are part of all life on this planet. We are interpenetrated by it, and we interpenetrate the entire web of life that makes up planet Earth. And as we alter and modify and change it in ways that may be destructive to it, we do so, frankly, at our own risk. Karen in Sacramento, California. Hey, Karen, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having that guest on so we can tell how much more work we have to do.
That's James Inhofe's spokesman.
He's the
head Republican on this issue.
I'm a science teacher, and I worked at the USGS on the Global Climate Change Program. You can't get people who are more mellow and, you know, flexible. These are people who will look at their data and they'll go, I see it from this perspective, I see it from that perspective, better report it this way. You know, these aren't people with axes to grind or political agendas. Scientists are too busy to get politically involved. When they report their data, they report their data.
And their data universally says global warming is real and it's caused by human activities.
These politicians are so ridiculous. And the Chinese have higher car standards than us. And you hear these politicians on the news all the time going, well, if we pass AB 32 in California, we'll lose all kinds of business to countries who have lesser standards than us. And no, we're the ones falling behind.
The race to the bottom. It's the same argument that they make. I had a guy on the program here in Portland this morning who was saying, I can't quote him, so, you know, essentially what he was arguing is the public employees who get good pensions, that's a terrible thing. You know, how dare they? And it's the race to the bottom. Let's have everybody have the salary of a Walmart greeter, and let's have the United States have the environmental standards of every other third world country in the world, because after all, ever since Reagan, 26 years since Reagan, we have become a third world country, at least economically, and with regard to trade, so why don't we just, you know, admit it and start behaving like one?
Right. Why don't those people admit the love of money is all evil? But
yeah,
I did look up that article you was talking about, and here, just a few stanzas down, it says the panel does report that the level of CO2 in the atmosphere has accelerated in the past 5 years. It also predicts that temperatures will rise by 4.5 Celsius during the next 100 years, bringing more frequent heat waves and storms.
Interesting. And this is the study that Mark was just quoting.
They don't even read the stuff they baloney us with when they get on the air. So they're just, and they don't admit that the majority of America is just not following them anymore.
Well, I think they're figuring that out. And that's why they're trying to, if there's a last gasp really going on, you know, as Cheney referred to the insurgency, that's where it's happening. Karen, got to move along. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Chris in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Oh, real good. Hey, listen, just real brief on that last lady and the guest that you had before, although that was my primary reason for calling. I just think guys like that, their main mission is not so much as to convince anyone of anything, but more or less to muddy the waters in public opinion, make people think there's two sides of a coin when it's really one. But if you muddy the water enough, then everything becomes gray. So, you know, it's not that they're trying to persuade anybody. Let me get to Bush real quick.
Sure.
Have you read this book or heard this book, Bush on the Couch?
Yeah, Dr. Justin Frank. I've interviewed him on this program over the last 2 years, two or three times, and I've read his book. Yeah, I know.
I hope your opinion, what is your opinion of that real quick?
I think that there's a better than 50% probability that Justin Frank is right.
And I even think it's greater than that. But anyway, my point to this is this. This guy from the very beginning that has been in office, he's a simple man with a simple mind. And before someone thinks that this is just someone calling a rag on Bush and not a supporter, well, they're correct. I'm not calling a rag on them necessarily. But the point is, this man has a very simple, limited amount of intellect. Anytime you get a president of the United States who doesn't have any intellectual curiosity, the point is, the reason we can't extricate ourselves out of Iraq or move on to solving problems or move on to another way of doing things there is because this country is kind of coalescing around his mind, as opposed to he coalescing around the country's mind.
Right, which is the way it's supposed to be. He thinks that he's the imperial leader, and we have to follow him. And in fact, he is the elected representative, and he's supposed to follow us. With regard to your assertion, Chris, that he's has a limited intellect, I know several people who know George Bush and who have spent time with him and have talked with him, and we've had a few of them on the program here. He is not a dummy. George W. Bush is not a dummy. He may not be the most articulate guy in the world. Actually, you know, when he's talking about anger and revenge and hate and punishment, he's incredibly articulate. He can go on for paragraphs without, you know, with perfectly constructed sentences, and he's absolutely clear. You try having him have a conversation, however, about compassion or caring for your fellow man, and he starts falling all over himself. Mark Crispin Miller wrote a whole book about this called The Bush Dyslexicon, and it reveals a part of his personality. But I think that, you know, we really need in this discussion, we need to not just go beyond bashing Bush. We need to leave that in the dust, leave that behind, and say, Tom, you know, what can we as a country do if we have a dysfunctional president?
But Tom, I'm really not a Bush basher. But what I'm trying to understand is, okay, you assign intellect to him. People around him say he's intellectual. Well, I doubt the
I'm not saying he's intellectual. I'm saying the guy is smart. And most of his intelligence is actually interpersonal intelligence. If you look at Howard Gardner's, you know, seven types of intelligences, he is brilliant at getting people around him to go along with him or to be afraid of him or whatever. He can evoke emotions in people very, very effectively. He can bond with an audience. When he does his little town councils and town halls, even the people who oppose him go away amazed.
Listen, I don't. That's beyond me. Maybe I'm not smart enough, but let me just tell you what I think the results is. We've got a situation in Iraq where your generals are telling you this thing is not working.
Yep.
People all around you are telling you this, and he want to stay the course and go down the same road. Now, someone once said that the definition of insanity when you keep doing the same things over and over and over again, trying to get a different result. Now, the point is here, there's something psychologically wrong. And by the way, I don't think, and you can tell me that a million times, but I don't think it's just a situation of, first of all, I don't think he's intelligent. Secondly, I think there's a deep-rooted psychological problem going on here.
I'm agreeing with you there, Chris.
I
agree with you and with Justin Frank and with Mike Barnicle, frankly, yesterday on Joe Scarborough's show, that he's delusional. There's no doubt in my mind about it. Chris, we've got to wrap it up. But, you know, you made your point, and you made it well, and I appreciate it. The question is, what do we do about it? And I think the only thing we can do, or the first thing that we have to do, is we have to get as aggressive as we can, as individuals, as citizens. We have to behave like citizens and let our elected representatives know that please don't follow this guy off the edge of that cliff. Please don't. 45 minutes past the hour.
Taking my country back. Boys, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't lie. You've been treating my scars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to red Chinese. You blew the budget and you bought Iraq. I'm taking my country back.
And welcome back to the place where our talking points come from, Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Tom Hartman here with you. Also filling in for Al Franken this week, playing my regular program as his program, and so we're both syndicated by Air America in the exact same time slot, so works out well. And Al is in Iraq. He was going to actually call in the first segment of the program. We've been trying to get him in, you know, so all is well, apparently, in Iraq with Al. But we just couldn't, Lauren said, I think he tried 14 times, we just couldn't make a phone connection work from Baghdad. So one of these times over the next week and a half. 1-866-440-8466, 440-THOM, our telephone number, and tomhartman.com, however you spell it, will get you to our homepage where you'll find the phone number and also up at the top of the page the link to our live chat room where you can drop in and say hi. BJ in University Place, Washington. Hey, BJ, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
Tom, great.
With global warming, I think one thing is you always talk about framing, Tammy, and things like when you say we're in a police action in Iraq and things like that. And with global warming, we have to stop putting people on the defense when we say that humans are causing global warming. We're not causing the global warming, but we are increasing the effect of global warming is something that happens all the time, but we're increasing the effect of it. And that, I think, I believe that CO2 emissions and everything are causing damage, but we can't keep saying that we are the sole cause. I mean, when we say we're causing it, it sounds like we're saying we're the sole cause.
What we're saying is that the amount of increased emissions and whatnot, our contribution to carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and it's substantial. I mean, it's been a couple hundred parts per billion, or per million, over the last 50 years, and over the last 200 years, that our contribution is enough, that it is altering the balance of things enough that it is putting not only other species, but us, the human species, at risk. And so to the extent that that's the case, I think it's very reasonable to say that, you know, we're causing global warming and we should be worried about it. It's a nice way to just reduce it down to the bottom line.
Well, but as soon as you do that, you make people defensive. And I think, like, when I went and watched the Al Gore show, and I...
Right, Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, and before that, to be honest, I was really like, okay, we're probably doing something, but we're not doing that much.
Yeah.
And I watched it, and I saw the effect that we are actually having. But the one thing he kept on saying, I mean, the one thing you saw is that this has happened. Like, the people, especially the far right, they keep on showing these warming periods and stuff like that. Yeah, that's natural. Well, global warming is natural, and it's happened over time periods. But what we have done is we've raised our level of CO2 way past where it's ever been, and the temperature has gone higher than that. And that's what we needed to show, not say that we're the sole cause, because otherwise they're able
because
to...
Because then they can kind of nitpick the argument. Well, that's a good point. It's a good point, BJ, and thanks for making it. 1-866-440-8466. James in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, James.
Hello, Tom. You know, people like that are probably going to be unreachable until they're actually, on the desert somewhere where there used to be an ocean.
You mean people like Mark? Here's the thing that gets, you know, Mark's a decent guy, and you know, God bless him for coming on this program. A lot of people, there's a lot of conservatives who are absolutely totally afraid to come on and debate with me, and he will do it, and he'll repeatedly do it, and you know, I admire that, I respect that, but
I think we've got to get
to the point where where we agree that there's a consensus.
Well, Tom, I applaud your effort to, try and raise the level of debate, if nothing else. Sometimes I think it's lost on deaf ears, but I just think it was really interesting that he brought it up twice, that his side was interested in sound scientific research. Well, how much more scientific research has to come over the transom before they realize they're on the losing side of it?
Yeah, we have over 1,000 peer-reviewed studies saying that global warming is real, that humans are contributing to it in a way that is significant, and that the significance of that contribution is that it is putting life at Earth at risk.
Wasn't there also a report by our own Defense Department in the last few years that said the biggest threat to global stability is going to be climate change?
That's right, because it's going to produce environmental refugees. It's going to redraw the maps of countries.
Global unrest.
That's right, and in the spread of disease, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, when the Defense Department starts getting worried about it, you know it's a serious issue. James, thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Bill in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
Not much. This is a little recently I haven't been able to get you, but in my car. So it's good to have you on the 11 to 2 slot here in Madison.
Thank you.
Hey,
we have about 30 seconds before we have to wrap this hour up, Bill. What's up?
Oh, okay. In response to the global warming, what do you think are some of the aspects that we can take out of this to move forward and to
possibly I think we need a Manhattan Project style commitment of effort. And frankly, it would cost a whole lot less than the Iraq War did. A few $100 billion at the very most.
I'm thinking you should have like a community level involvement where.
Oh, absolutely. To develop and deploy renewable energy sources that are non-centralized. I think centralized is one of the biggest problems we have right now is central power generation and long line power transmission. 17% of the electricity in the United States is lost in long lines, just being transmitted. If every community generated their own power, they would have more incentive to generate clean power in a clean way, and they would be less dependent upon huge corporations that can control things. I mean, that's why we have centralized power. It's all about the money. And we would be producing fewer emissions. It's just real straightforward. We need to be out in front of this. We need to become this needs to be like the dot-com boom, and we need to be the solar and wind and everything else world leaders. 57 minutes past the hour. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
So what's really going on in Iraq? What's really going on with our president? What's really going on with the air war over Iraq, which is hardly ever reported? What's really going on in the larger Middle East? What's the chess game that's being played? I'm telling you, George W. Bush is playing checkers. This is the argument, the problem that I always had with the way that the Democratic Party was taking on Karl Rove is that they were playing checkers and Rove was playing chess. Well, now the situation is somewhat reversed. There are players in the Middle East who are playing chess, and we are playing checkers. Dar Jamail, an independent journalist who's been reporting from Iraq since November of 2003, writes of the Sunday Herald in Scotland, the Interpress Service, the News Standard, Internet site, among others. He's been on Democracy Now!, BBC, Irish Public Radio, Radio South Africa, Radio Hong Kong, and on this program several times. His website, Dar, D-A-H-R, Jamail, J-A-M-A-I-L, Iraq, IRAQ.com for his reporting from Iraq. Dar Jamail, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Great to have you with us. We were talking last week, and you were telling me and our listeners about how the situation is playing out in Iraq and what the larger consequences are for the region. Can we begin there?
Yes, really. What we're starting to see is it is bleeding over across Iraq's borders. The violence and the chaos of the occupation is certainly starting to affect the region on levels that. The same levels that experts before the invasion took place warned that this would most likely happen given time, that it would eventually pull neighboring countries into it and basically set the entire region on fire. And we're seeing that with what happened with the statement made coming out of Saudi Arabia recently that they would be sending military aid in to back the Sunnis in Iraq if they continue to suffer at the hands of the primarily Shia death squad. We have the situation in northern Iraq where Turkey is using quite bellicose rhetoric towards the Kurds, where if the Kurds do keep moving towards autonomy and possibly independence, Turkey would most likely launch an invasion into that part of Iraq. So those are just two glaring examples. But then we have an increasingly militant stance of Jordan, where they're making it more and more difficult for Iraqi refugees to come into their country. So
they have over a million of them in there now, right now, don't they?
Well over a million, yes. Well over a million in Jordan, another million in Syria, and then another million and a half internally displaced within Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Dar Jamail, some of the events of the last few weeks that seem disparate, but I suspect are actually interlocked. First of all, the fellow that you quoted who said, you know, if it melts down any farther, if the Sunnis are really at risk in Iraq, then Saudi Arabia is going to go in. He wrote that as an op-ed piece in the Washington Post and then got fired. But there's a pretty broad consensus that he was actually speaking for the kingdom.
Right, and that's really not a surprise, and I think that's pretty indicative of why he was fired, that so much attention was drawn to that immediately after, upon that being published, that enough heat was applied to that government, political heat from the Bush administration, that this man had to be let go. But that's certainly not going to change the policy of the government of Saudi Arabia.
So it was a statement of truth. So here's, let me just toss out a couple of events here. We have in Saudi Arabia, we have Prince Turki, basically, you know, the ambassador to the United States, just up and quitting one day, and not even, no ceremony, no nothing, no goodbye. He just hops on a plane and heads out of town, just like he did, by the way, when he was the head of the intelligence service a week before 9/11, or 3 weeks before 9/11. This is number one. You've got Prince Turki doing that. Number two, Dick Cheney being summoned over to Saudi Arabia to be dressed down about something we don't know what yet. Number three, in Syria, on the one hand, you've got the Baker Commission, you've got the UN, you've got pretty much everybody, including several senators, going over to talk with the Syrians at the same time that the Bush administration refuses to, and now there are reports in the press that the Bush administration is aggressively, militarily, internally, with, you know, the special operations forces and whatnot, trying to bring down the Syrian government, and that's why they can't talk to them. We have in Iran now, there was just elections last week where, or over the weekend, I guess, recently, let's say, it was last week, the end of last week, where Ahmadinejad just got slapped upside the head, and the guy who got the largest number of votes in Tehran is actually in favor of dialogue with the West and a rapprochement. In other words, the moderates are starting to take over Iran at the same time that Bush is now, if the reports are to be believed, is sending another aircraft carrier group over to the coast of Iran, which Scott Ritter on this program 6 months ago, I said, do you think that Bush is going to attack Iran as part of some sort of election strategy for the 2004 election or 2006 elections? And he said, I think he'd like to, but there's a logistical problem here. You can only attack in that part of the world after the end of February, basically, because of the way the weather is and the moon and all this other kind of stuff. And so he said, if you start seeing them sending, you know, aircraft carrier groups in and massive troop movements in January and in you know, talking about it in December and happening in January and February, then he is going to attack Iran in March. And now we're starting to see that. Pull all this together for us, Dar Jamil.
Well, I think another very, very important factor that a lot of us forget to mention is the fact that, and I think it's a big reason of why this administration is so set on Iran today more than ever, is that Iran has been playing the United States like a harp in Iraq. This started back in January 04 when Sistani called for the massive demonstrations across Baghdad, which essentially forced Paul Bremer, the then head of the CPA, who was unwilling to have elections in Iran, was forced to have them in January 30, 05 by the protest called by Sistani. They
right,
did
because
not
Bremer,
want to have those.
Bremer was going to have a Sunni government. I mean, that was the bottom line. And Sistani called his bluff, pushed him, you know, made him back down, and now we have a Shia government for all practical purposes.
Right, which is extremely pro-Iranian. And it's another instance where the flailing, desperate Bush administration in Iraq, which has been siding with anyone who can promise them some modicum of stability and security for their plans there on any given day, they've been just simply played by the Iranians and have lost total control of the situation.
Right.
In
so
Iraq.
A Shia government in Iraq aligned with Iran is a disaster for Saudi Arabia because the Saudi royal family is dealing with their own internal Shiite problem, are they not?
They are, without a doubt. The areas of Saudi Arabia where a large percentage, if not the main percentage, of their oil deposits are, it just happens to be a majority Shia population in that section of the country that lives on top of those. So that's a very
now
dangerous.
only about 17% of the total population of Saudi Arabia is Shiite, but they happen to be living where the oil is.
Right, right.
That's spooky for the Saudis. That's got to have the Saudi royal family, a Sunni family. It's got to have the Saudi royal family very concerned. Is Prince Turki's resignation and all this? I mean, is the family trying to decide whether they should become militant or whether they should stay diplomatic?
Well, it's so confusing for everyone in the region now, as the Bush administration is clearly flailing their stance towards the Iraq Study Group report that just came out, the continuing refusal to really abide by most of the suggestions made by that, which are being seen as a bit more moderate, along with what's happening in Iraq's neighbors. It's very confusing for everyone, and nobody really knows what the erratic nature of this administration and the one huge mistake after another being made regarding Iraq. I don't think anyone there really knows anymore what to expect. And then, as you said, on top of this, now we have warships steaming off towards Iran, Bush talking about increasing the size of the military. Both of those two factors definitely look like an attack against that country could be coming sometime, even in the near future, possibly. So I think everyone's extremely, extremely on edge, which really adds another layer of urgency and danger to the whole situation in the region.
And Bush doesn't seem to be listening to the adults.
Without a doubt. No, it's the younger Bush is going off on his own, thinks that it's his carte blanche to use this last year and a half, 2 years in office to basically try to ram as much of his policy that's left through as he can. And I think that includes his really messianic vision, as one person inside of his administration called it, that Bush has about the regime change in Tehran.
He thinks that if he can bring this about, that some. But regime change is happening right now without us. I mean, the moderates just won the election, not entirely, but I mean, they're, you know, I think that Ahmadinejad, his whole, you know, a Holocaust denier conference was an attempt to get to become popular for the election, and it backfired on him.
I think it did too, but we have to be careful, I think, not to use logic when talking about the Bush administration.
That's scary. Dar Jamail, DarJamail, Iraq.com, his website. You're one of the finest reporters out there doing some great work. Thanks so much for being with us on the program.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Good talking with you again, Dar.
You too.
16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on the True People's Radio.
Al Franken Show. Now back to guest host Tom Hartman.
I'm not gonna shut my mouth. I'm for the truth to come out about the loser with the iron will. And here's the losers with the dollar bill. Till I go down.
How you tell him, Jackson Brown? And welcome back to the radio support group of by and for we the people of the United States of America. 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. Over at NBC News, Brian Williams reporting, and Jim Mikuláševský, that it is being viewed by some in the Pentagon that Bush's statement yesterday that we need a larger army is the carrot that he's dangling out in order to try to convince the Joint Chiefs, who have already leaked that they're opposed to this surge idea, more troops in Iraq, to get them to go along with it. He's basically trying to bribe them. Here's just a quick soundbite here that starts out with Brian.
The president's decision to push for this expansion of the U.S. military has caught a few people at the Pentagon by surprise. We turn to our Pentagon correspondent, Jim Mikuláševský. And Jim, a lot of the generals have been asking for this for a long time, as recently as last week on Capitol Hill.
That's exactly right, Brian, but some military officials are highly suspicious of the president's sudden turnaround on the issue. They believe that he's dangling that offer out there in an effort to buy the military support for the option to surge additional American troops into Iraq, as if it's some kind of trade-off. You throw in 30,000 more American troops into Baghdad now in exchange for an overall larger force 4 to 5 years down the road. But many military leaders that we're talking to still oppose a surge. They still believe it won't work and will put more Americans at risk. As one senior military official put it today, it'll be like throwing kerosene on a fire.
Kerosene on a fire. By the way, Bush, when John Kerry suggested that the Army should be expanded by 40,000 troops, he trashed him for it. Absolutely trashed him for it. Amazing. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. Wesley in Wyoming, Michigan. Hey, Wesley.
Hello.
Hi, what's up?
I just wanted to bring to your attention an article in the New York Times today on page A14, an article by Mark Santora about Najaf. It's the first province turned over by Americans to Iraqis to control, mm-hmm. and the two previous ones were turned over by the British. But listen to this. The general public was not invited to attend, but powerful tribal leaders were, and they sat beneath a sign that read, "We are the sons of those who drove the British out in 1920. And then the soldiers that we've turned it over to, the Iraqis, they paraded for a review. Each man reached into his right pocket, pulled out a frog, bit its head off. They threw the squirming legs to the ground as the group leader held aloft a live rabbit. He flipped
right.
the belly.
I know the story. He cut the belly of the thing, pulled its heart out while it was still beating, and
right.
ate it.
And then they all took turns gnawing on the carcass. And it
right.
said here, it was explained later that this practice was especially popular among Saddam Hussein's feared Fatahin militia,
right.
whose members had done the same thing with live snakes and wolves.
Well, and the
oh,
reality
boy.
Is that this did not start with Saddam Hussein. This goes back 6,000 years, probably longer than that.
I know, but look who we're dealing with.
Yeah. No,
I wonder if the fundamentalists that are Bush's support have anything to say about it.
Well, the other point that they make in that article in the New York Times is that we have never really, I mean, we're saying we're handing over jurisdiction of this region. We've never had control of that region.
Uh-huh.
It's just, you know, it's a region that's been intrinsically and inherently stable. And so, gee, okay, what we did in that region in
did
Najaf,
you see the picture?
Is we declared victory and left. And that's what we need to do with the rest of Iraq.
You know, during the ceremony, they didn't even have an orchestra. They played music from CDs.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty amazing.
It's pathetic.
Yeah.
I don't know what country I live in anymore.
Well, it has changed considerably in the last 6 years. You're absolutely right. Wesley, thank you for the call. Mike in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I noticed that Bush had another one of these signing statements the other day.
Now, you're talking about the one on the Indian nuclear reactor thing that we were talking about on Monday?
Yeah, I don't get to catch your program very often. It's great that you're on for Al Franken, but I just wondered, what's your opinion on this? Because I can't imagine how this can be constitutional, that Bush can sign a law and then say, oh, no, this isn't what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
Either he signs it or vetoes it.
It's not constitutional, and these things are going to get knocked down. This is over 1,000 signing statements now that he has attached to pieces of legislation. The piece of legislation that you and I are talking about, specifically for those people who, you know, didn't listen to that conversation or that part, we are selling to India through Westinghouse, a company that has been bought by the Japanese, oddly enough. And so we're helping to fund a Japanese company to sell nuclear technology to India that refuses to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and refuses to allow inspectors in and is building bombs with their older reactors. So we're going to give them new reactors so that they can produce electricity. And so when Congress wrote this law, they tried to write a bunch of restrictions on the behavior of the Indians into it, and they did. And in fact, I talked with Congressman Earl Blumenauer about this, and he says, you know, we were very careful about this. So Bush issues this signing statement that basically says, I don't have to follow the law. I don't have to pay attention to those restrictions. I can just do whatever I want. And you're absolutely right. It is wrong. It is unconstitutional. Hey, time now for the Tom Hartman Program's Progressive Pop Quiz. Our question today, President Bush said yesterday that the answer to America's economic problems is to go out and do what? The sixth caller with the correct answer at 1-866-440-THOM, 866-440-8466, gets an autographed copy of my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll come back with our winner and the answer to the question right after the break.
I'm just an old truth teller. I'm your candid friend. I'm not some daydream seller. I do not pretend.
Welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. 34 minutes past the hour. We have a winner in our progressive pop quiz. Our question once again, President Bush yesterday said the answer to America's problems is to go out and do what? And congratulations to Mike Estes in San Diego, California. He's going to be listening on KLSD. And Mike had it right that the answer to the question was, well, here it is.
As we work with Congress in the coming year to chart a new course in Iraq and strengthen our military to meet the challenges of the 21st century, we must also work together to achieve important goals for the American people here at home. This work begins with keeping our economy growing. And I encourage you all to go shopping more.
And there you go. To go shopping more. Isn't that a noble thought? Somehow, you know, Churchillian, Rooseveltian. I don't know. Anyway, congratulations for winning the progressive pop quiz. There has to, you know, there's some good that comes out of these things. Charles in Georgetown, Kentucky. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. I'm just curious to know, how do we feel like we're going to get any answers as far as global warming or this masquerade of a war in Iraq without doing something about our political process and the way that our Congress and Senate is funded?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And again, there's a chicken and an egg problem here. In order to get people into office who are actually committed to public service and going to do the right thing and listening to their constituents and responding to people in an appropriate way, folks like, you know, Bernie Sanders, Russ Feingold, whatnot, in order to get those kind of people in office, we're going to have to get politically active. And it doesn't mean just showing up in the ballot box once every 2 years or every 4 years. It means showing up at the local party headquarters. In my book, Screwed, I have three examples. In the real world, I know of at least a dozen examples of situations where people showed up at the local county Democratic Party, in one case the Republican Party, in one case the Green Party, but you typically it's the Democratic Party with our crowd, and they showed up at the local party meeting and discovered that it was basically just a couple of old fossils, you know, hanging around, or it had become a social club, or it was a get-along, go-along, or it had become an extension of the local Chamber of Commerce. And so for the next meeting, and so, well, let me finish this. For the next meeting, they get a half a dozen of their friends to come along with them, or a dozen of their friends, and show up and start participating, and eventually get themselves elected into office. Here in Multnomah County, which is the largest county that encompasses most of the population of Portland, Oregon, for example, we have a Democratic governor, and he's a good guy, Ted Kulongoski, running for re-election. Multnomah County, again, one of these cases where a young person decided to get active, and Randy is his name. He's the chairman of the Democratic Party now in Multnomah County, simply because he showed up and got a bunch of his friends to show up with him and vote him in. I mean, he worked hard to get there, right? But he said, you know, okay, I'm going to get involved. I'm going to participate in this thing. And the governor just assumed that he would, the most liberal county in the state, he'd get their endorsement. He didn't get their endorsement in the primary. You know, it's like, hey, you've got to show us that you're going to become more progressive. I mean, that's how it happens. When we start getting active at the local level, and it starts echoing up, then you're going to start getting politicians. And now, you know, the governor is really starting to get some aggressively progressive positions out there. And when that that's how it has to happen. You know, that's it, Charles. That's in my opinion. It's not just sitting around complaining and whining. That doesn't work. Occasionally calling your member of Congress, good start. Occasionally writing a letter, or, you know, calling a talk show, good stuff. You should do it all, but getting politically involved.
Well, it sounds like what you're talking about, as far as their meetings, is great practice for what actually happens in Washington as far as playing ball.
That's why we need to take them over. See, people say, I had a guy call this program 6-8 months ago, and he said, wait a minute, are you telling me that the salvation of America is the Democratic Party? Because I was saying, you know, show up at your local Democratic Party and start participating. And he said, are you telling me the Democratic Party is the salvation of America? I said, no, I'm telling you something far more radical than that. I'm suggesting that we, progressives, that we infiltrate the Democratic Party and take it over, the same way the conservatives infiltrated and took over the Republican Party back in the late 1960s and early 1970s.
Well, Tom, the the problem goes further than that, that once we get these people into office, once they get established and once they start playing ball, the ball game is basically the same as it always has been.
No, but they don't have to play ball. I mean, there are a number of good members of Congress who are role models in this regard. Bernie Sanders ran against the richest guy in the state of Vermont. Bernie Sanders was a congressman from Vermont for I think 14 years. He's been on this program every Friday for over 3 years now. He'll be on tomorrow, in fact. And the first hour, we always do this brunch with Bernie, because he's the only politician I've ever met who will give a straight answer to any question. He's just a stand-up guy. And he's not a Democrat. He's not a Republican. He's an independent. And he ran for the United States Senate in Vermont for Jim Jeffords' seat. Jim Jeffords is retiring. And the Republicans threw at him literally, the richest guy in the state, who wrote his own check for $6 million in a state with only 600,000 people in it. And so, you know, Bernie put out the word, and people from all over America and all over Vermont sent him $10, $20, $30. He was able to raise enough money. I don't think he outspent his opponent, but he was able to raise enough money and get the message out. And he went door to door, precinct to precinct, doing town meetings, doing it the old-fashioned way. He's beholden to nobody. You know, Dennis Kucinich is doing the same kind of thing. There are a lot of good politicians out there who are not playing the lobbyist game, and they are increasing in number. And so we need to be supporting them, and we need to be working for things like public financing of elections, like and publicly owned elections like we have here in Portland, like they have in Maine, like they have in part in Arizona. We need to be moving in those directions. And instant runoff voting, which the Green Party is a champion of, in which we have now in over 300 communities across the United States, largely because of the Green Party. Another good reason for, even if you're participating with the Democratic Party and trying to infiltrate and take it over, to also participate with the Green Party. But it's all about, we have to get active. It's time for us to get politically active once again. We can't just sit back and think that this is sports that we watch. We actually have to become players.
Well, it's all part of the vicious circle where the American worker has a hard time getting involved.
Well, I know, and you're absolutely right, Charles, and that's one of the reasons, and thank you for the call, and that's one of the reasons why the Republicans don't want us involved. It's one of the reasons why they don't want us voting. In fact, Paul Weyrich, who is probably he's the godfather of Republican politics, one of the most senior Republican strategists, the direct mail guy who claimed credit for getting Reagan into office, worked on George W. Bush's last campaign, he's worked on every Republican campaign, he is the brains behind the brains behind the brains, right? Paul Weyrich. Google the guy. It's amazing. Speaking in a church to a group of activist Christian Republicans, here's what he had to say. And this is why they use negative advertising, by the way, because it drives down the vote. The only effect of negative advertising doesn't cause people to vote for your candidate. It causes them to say, ah, to hell with it, they're all bums, and not show up at the polls. That's why they do negative advertising. Not to get you to vote for their guy, but to get you not to vote. Here's Paul Weyrich on this topic.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
You get that? Our leverage in the elections goes up as the voting populace goes down. Roberta in Chimayo, New Mexico.
Tom, it is thrilling to be able to hear you live again in Santa Fe here.
Well, thank you.
And last from your past year.
Yeah. Oh, this is Roberta, who used to be back when I was on iAmerica Radio 3 years ago.
The most stimulating person I've ever argued with.
We were on KTRC. Yes, indeed. Well, it's good to hear from you.
Only on the nitpicking scale, because you and I are right there, compañero. You know, and I really want to say that I salute, no, I more than salute, I bow to your, not only your veracity continuing forever, but the...
Well, I bow back at you, Roberta.
The tenacity of you to stay in there and keep our hope alive that there is sanity in America after all, and that we aren't all ugly Americans.
We have to save this country, Roberta.
Yeah,
we have
do.
A long way to go before we sleep.
And the point I want to bring up here, because I always find something to pick a nit over, is that we have to concentrate on principles before personalities. We have to concentrate on systems, and be statesmen, not politicians.
Well, you're singing my song. I mean, that's why I said yesterday and the day before, I don't care if the presidential nominee for president is Hillary Clinton or Russ Feingold. I don't care if it's the most progressive or the least progressive member of the Democratic Party. I'll work for them because I believe that if we can get enough of us out there, they will come around to our point of view. And in fact, we're seeing that happen over and over again. It's not
right
about
on,
the politicians,
right on,
it's about the parade.
You're
us.
Doing well. But I wanted to say that on that viewpoint of principles, and you talk about founding fathers, you know, and that's what we're all admiring so much, is that we, with this impeachment thing, I think for a principle alone, it has to be said. I mean, you bring up today so well that the Bush man is not only cunning, but insane. Let's say it.
Well,
and
let's say not well.
The corporatists are really fascist, Tom. You know that.
Not only do I know it, Roberta, I've written books about it. I absolutely agree with you, and I thank you so much for the call. We got to take a break here, but yes, and great to hear from you again, Roberta, after all these years. 45 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, also filling in for Al Franken this weekend. Next, we'll be right back.
Franken Show with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio.
Have you had enough of hypocrisy?
Have you had enough
of the spit and
scream? Have you had enough? Does it make you
want to
scream and jump?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Have you had enough
of the rubber stamp?
Have you had enough
of the wiretap?
If you had enough, then it's time to throw the rascals out.
Yes, if you had enough. Talk radio for the rest of us. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick heads up. January 5th, I'll be doing this program live, my program live, from our affiliate WPTT in Pittsburgh. Been on the air there for a couple of years, and we'll be doing the show live from their studios and then doing a book signing at the Borders Bookstore in Monroeville that night, 7 o'clock that night, January 5th. It's a Friday. On January 6th, Saturday, the next day, I'll be in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I'll be at Meggers and Quinn at 2 o'clock on that Saturday afternoon doing a book signing. And then on January 12th through 14th, we'll be in Reno for a screening of a movie called Crude Impact that I'm in. And, well, on it goes. You can check it all out over at our website and Amazon.com offering an additional 5% off on Screwed, by the way, the book that I'll be signing. In our chat room, some interesting conversations going on. You can get there by going to TomHartman.com and just click live chat. There's no fee or anything, you know, and you don't have to, you don't have to sign over your firstborn son or anything like that. Robert Bob makes the comment. He says, I was listening to Lester Brown yesterday on the radio here in Chicago, and he made a good point. He said, there's not enough food for all of us. China owns the USA and could buy all the grain production of the USA twice. He says, ah, ha, 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 these stupid commies. Yeah. Interesting. Here's another one. Blue in Missouri says, Bush had Gates have breakfast with regular soldiers, wink, wink, this morning. And they all said they want more troops. It was on TV this morning. Oh, geez. So now Gates is doing photo ops. Did he have a plastic turkey, too? Somehow I missed that. Well, I don't watch TV in the morning, so. And then IndieOp says, just wanted to alert Tom that the rabbit killing example is hardly limited to Iraq or the Middle East. I watched Winter Soldier a week ago, and it was done by U.S. officers before troops shipped off to Nam. Interesting. He says, in that movie, it's a film of the testimony of Vietnam War vets to war crimes in 71-72, includes John Kerry. So, fascinating stuff. Thank you to those of you who are over there participating in the chat room. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. And Pat in Sacramento, California, you're live and on the air. Hey, Pat.
Hey, thanks very much. Sure. Listen, I was really stunned by that exchange between you and Senator Inhofe's representative this morning. And I can make a point real quickly, real simply, I think. It seemed to me that you were trying to say, I have evidence that indicates that we have a fire in the attic and the roof's going to cave in on us. And he was saying, I have evidence to the contrary, but it's not a one-for-one. You were saying, let me show you mine. And he was saying, hell no, the only facts that count are mine. And my question to you is, I know you got a background as a therapist, is I go nuts every time I go up against somebody with that rigid mentality, you know, and I end up looking aggressive to their passive.
Yeah.
When I say, are you freaking crazy? Come on, let's look at what's going on.
You know, sometimes that's
here.
An appropriate response, Pat.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, help me out here.
Yeah.
How do you contain yourself in those moments when somebody does something as knuckleheaded as what I thought I heard on the radio between you and him this morning?
Well, you know, what I found is that there are really two kinds of discussions that we have out there in the world of this category, you know, political discussions like this. There are discussions with people whose personal interests are so calibrated in such a way that they're not going to change their opinion. It has to do with their paycheck. It has to do with their worldview. It has to do with how they were raised. It has to do with something, you know, and it'll be different for every person. It's good that is going to make them sufficiently rigid that you're not going to be able to get through to them, or it's going to be a long, long, long time to do it. That's on the one hand. And you know, probably Mark's in that category. And I don't mean that as a slam on him. He just, you
know, it doesn't sound like it. You're not slamming him.
Yeah, no, his worldview is just completely different than mine. And we just have to acknowledge that, and then we have a conversation. But we both acknowledge each other as human beings, too. And I think that that's a real important thing. That's why I, you know, in the program I say, you know, helping you learn how to win the water cooler wars. The second part is the person who is simply misinformed. And that's probably 95% of the people out there in the world. That's the occasional conservative who will screw up enough courage to call this program, because we, you know, when conservatives call this show, Lauren's standing instructions are always put them at the front of the line. I'll always take them first. And so we can have a discussion and sometimes a debate and longtime listeners to the show will tell you there is a number of people who started out as conservatives calling me up to argue with me and are now regular listeners and proudly call themselves progressives or liberals. And I think that over time, when you present information in a way that is not my team, your team. There's a couple of fundamental errors that are made in people who are trying to debate this stuff. The first is the my team, your team thing, dealing with politics as if it's sports. Somebody has to win, somebody has to lose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm right, you're wrong, you're right, I'm wrong, that kind of thing. Just set all that aside. We're all people here together, so we first have to find a meeting point, which is we're both human beings. We're both residents of this planet. You know, we're if you're talking to somebody who has kids, you know, we're both, well, even if you're somebody who doesn't, we're concerned about future generations. We want, you know, so finding that commonality as a starting point. And then from there saying, okay, and, you know, we have a problem here. Or maybe we don't. I mean, so let's look at the evidence. And I really, my experience has been that over time, if you can keep it from being sports and you can keep it from being war, those are the two failures in debate. War is where it's not just my team or your team. It's you know, I'm going to totally crush you. You know, it's you know, the idea of just smashing people verbally. If you can avoid that so that their self-esteem is intact when you're still done, they're more likely to pay attention to what you have to say. So that's, you know, for me, that's what I... And the thing that keeps me from going crazy, Pat, is that I believe I'm right. You know, occasionally I find out I'm wrong, and then I'm willing to change my mind. But, you know, when I believe I'm right. Make sense? No, maybe not. I think Pat is gone. But anyway, Pat, thanks for the call. Those are my strategies. Seems to work out. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be back with your calls and more right after the news at the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program, talking back to the mainstream media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, also filling in this week for Al Franken. Victoria Jones with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., an accredited White House reporter and our senior Amtrak correspondent. Hey, Victoria. Amtrak?
Well, I'm actually at an Amtrak station, and if there are any announcements made in the background, I wanted you all to have an explanation for what they were.
I see. Okay. So, what's last night on MSNBC, Joe Scarborough and a few of his fellow talking heads guys, and this being the mainstream media, of course, they were all either Republicans or I think they had one moderate so-called Democrat. They were speculating about, has George gone off the rails? I mean, some serious concern about that. That it's just, this is like a dangerous thing. And I'm wondering if, in fact, let me just play a little clip of this. This is Joe Scarborough.
Mike Barnicle, as you know, I supported this war, and I supported this man twice for president, yet I'm growing more disturbed every night by how isolated George W. Bush has become. All the Joint Chiefs oppose his plan for Iraq. His lead general opposes his plan in Iraq, and now he's going to quit because Bush has ignored him. Colin Powell opposes his plan in Iraq, and an L.A. Times poll is showing that only 12% of Americans support his plan for more troops in Iraq. Shouldn't more Americans be disturbed at this unprecedented example of a White House that's in, and you can only call it this, a bunker mentality?
Now, this, keep in mind, this is from a Republican, former Republican congressman, and then Mike Barnicle uses the language of psychology, denial, interventions. Listen to this.
Well, I think, Joe, that more Americans ought to be truly depressed by what they saw today on TV, the latest press conference. We have a president of the United States who is isolated. He's delusional. He is stubborn.
Delusional?
He has had one intervention that clearly didn't work, the Baker-Hamilton report. He is clearly in need of another intervention. You don't have to be von Clausewitz to figure out that urban warfare in the city of Baghdad, comparably the size of New York City, a tremendously hostile environment now, will become even more hostile with the introduction of more American troops.
And then he continues from there. So anyhow, you're part of the Washington Press Corps. This is a position taken on several of the conservative television programs that Bush has lost it. I mean, how's the Press Corps responding to this?
Well, I would have to say, and I can only speak in a very generic, general way here, but I would have to say that it's almost treated as a given at this point
Bush has lost connection with reality?
That things are not quite right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Are you being very careful in your choice of language, but is that a euphemism for Bush is just a little bit nuts?
Yes.
Wow. And you think that most of the press corps thinks that?
I think most of the press corps would think that things have gone off the rails.
Now,
whether they would think he's nuts or not, I don't know, but I think they would think things have gone off the rails.
I noticed that, you know, he tries to make jokes and everybody politely laughs. He sometimes lectures the press corps and yells at them, and they seem to cower a little bit. Very rarely do people ask tough questions or follow-up questions. In fact, it's almost always British correspondents, the BBC guy a couple of days ago.
You're not allowed a follow-up question.
Okay. And it's almost like the way that I've seen people treating, you know, the crazy aunt or uncle, kind of thing, you know, or the Alzheimer's victim in the family, whatever. It's, we'll just kind of pat him on the head. But this is the President of the United States.
That's right.
I mean, this is a guy who has the ability with a stroke of a pen, with four or five words, or presumably with a push of a button, to end life on Earth.
That's right.
So what do we do?
That's all I've got to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a big sigh. I don't think that there's an answer to this. I guess we hunker down and hope for the next 2 years that nobody ticks them off too much. I completely agree that the Baker-Hamilton report was his lifeline. That was what he should have grabbed hold of.
That was the intervention that his dad threw to him.
That was the intervention, yeah. It was the intervention. That was the thing to grab hold of. And I heard many people say that.
Mm-hmm. And his response to that was that Jim Baker should go back to his day job.
And he said that there are many interesting ideas in the report. But saying an interesting idea can be an idea that you completely disagree with, so that means absolutely nothing.
Sure, sure. And now NBC and Jim Mikuláševsky reporting that in the Pentagon they're saying that Bush's offering to increase the size of the Army and the Marine Corps is really a quid pro quo. He's saying, I'll give you in 4 or 5 years what you want if you'll give me 30,000 troops to surge Baghdad right now. And that they're not all that interested in this quid pro quo.
And yet what can they do ultimately? Ultimately they're there to take orders.
I had, one of the folks at the radio station here that I'm broadcasting from dropped in and said, do you think it could be possible that among the Joint Chiefs, among the senior military, that they're actually talking about a coup d'etat? And I said, no, I really don't think it's possible. I think even the conversation would get somebody thrown in prison. Am I correct in that?
I think you're correct in that, absolutely. I don't think it's a possibility at all.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, frankly, I think a good thing. A coup d'etat would be the last thing that we would want in the United States.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a possibility. I don't think it's even crossed people's minds.
What we need is more involvement in the political process. Okay, Victoria, any news from Washington, D.C. that you want to share with our listeners?
No, there's very little happening. Everyone's getting ready to leave town. The president is heading out to Camp David tomorrow. And then on to Crawford after Christmas, probably a bit more shopping today, something like that. But really the only big news is the Pentagon wants $99.7 billion.
And we'll probably get it.
And we'll probably get it because everyone's afraid of being seen as being against the troops.
Yeah, amazing. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com, Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you very much.
Good speaking with you today. Former employees are suing Swift and Company for $23 million. You heard the story about the bust of the illegal immigrants, the aliens working at Swift and Company. Now, as Paul Harvey would say, we're hearing the rest of the story. Former employees, this is from thecourant.com. It's actually an Associated Press story. Former employees are suing Swift and Company for $23 million, alleging the meatpacking company conspired to keep wages down by hiring illegal immigrants. Gee, what a surprise. The 18 former employees are U.S. citizens and legal residents who worked at a plant in Cactus north of Amarillo, one of six facilities raided in a multi-state federal sweep that led to the arrest of nearly 1,300 employees. These plaintiffs, their attorney, Angel Reyes, said these plaintiffs are victims in a long-standing scheme by Swift to depress and artificially lower the wages of its workers by knowingly hiring illegal workers. I have been saying from day one, this is what the whole, quote, illegal immigration, end quote, thing is all about. It's all about higher profits for corporations and lower labor costs. Real, real simple. Another attorney, Michael Haygood, he said, when the Swift plant opened in Cactus, wages were approximately $20 an hour. Now the average wage is approximately $12 to $13 an hour. Illegal immigration has fueled this depression in wages. No, it's the hiring of illegal immigrants that fueled this depression in wages. And that's what fueled illegal immigration. Let's get the order of these things correct. The story goes on to say, although no charges were filed against Swift, it's the company that committed the crime. Although no charges were filed against Swift, Reyes said the plaintiffs believe company officials looked the other way when hiring workers from Central America willing to work for less money. Swift President and CEO Sam Robbitt has said the company never knowingly hired illegal workers. Now, at the same time, UFCW, United Food and Commercial Workers Local 7, freaked out by the fact that the workers, many of them who were represented by the union, it's not the union's job to determine whether somebody's, in this country legally or not. They represent workers, right? The union's freaked out because these people have been vanished. They've been disappeared. It's like Pinochet's Chile. They're gone. And this is John Bowen of UFCW Local 7. He says, we don't know where they are. We don't know what's happening. We don't know if they're being pressured to do something or not. We can't provide them or their families with information until we know where they are. It's the Department of Homeland Security doing this. Michael Chertoff talking about, oh, this is all about identity theft. And yet there were no demonstrations of anybody's identity being stolen. I mean, in terms of, like, bank accounts and things, yes, there were some, I guess, what, 20 of them had used somebody else's Social Security number, but no actual identity theft. 16 minutes past the hour.
Happy holidays. Tom Hartman is your gift from the Al Franken Show and Air America.
Don't we liberate the United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed and who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first.
And welcome back to the No Boring Zone.
Yeah, that's Merle Haggard. Keep the play that up there a little bit, Julian, yeah. When you've lost Merle Haggard, the guy who did Okie from Muskogee, you can find this over at YouTube. Just plug in Merle Haggard and America First.
Who's on the hill and who's watching the valley? Who's in charge of it all?
Oh, and we ran out of the bumper. Ah, well, anyway, it's Merle Haggard. When you've lost Merle Haggard, you have lost America. I got to tell you, it's just, you know, the guy, we don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. And he's doing it's a video. It's not just a song, it's a video, trashing Bush and trashing Iraq. And at the very end, it's dedicated to Johnny Cash. Amazing. But anyhow, back to the Swift and company thing. The larger picture here is the encouragement of the employment of people who are not citizens of the United States that has been going on since the Reagan administration declared war on the middle class and working people in the United States. They wanted to defund the Democratic Party, the Reaganites. They were the Reagan administration, the Republicans. Defund the Democratic Party. How do you defund the Democratic Party? You destroy one of their major sources of income, which is the unions. How do you destroy the unions? One of the ways that you destroy the unions is you drive down wages. You make people fight against each other rather than against the employers. How do you do that? You increase the labor pool. This is not rocket science. David Ricardo, the famous economist, wrote about this in 1814 in a paper called On Labor. That when the demand for labor is equal to the supply of labor, or the supply of labor slightly exceeds the demand for labor, then wages will fall to what Ricardo referred to as a subsistence level, which he defined as enough to prevent starvation. In other words, no more middle class, just the working poor. That's what conservatives have brought us every time they've run an economy, whether it was Victorian England that Charles Dickens wrote about. You know, here we are, Christmas time, A Christmas Carol. A lot of people are going to be reading that story or watching the movie or, you know, in Victorian England, Dickens really understood this. I mean, his father was thrown into a debtor's prison. In Victorian England, you had the ultimate example of laissez-faire conservative economics. You have a very small, very wealthy ruling class. And Scrooge and Marley were not part of that, by the way. The very wealthy were infinitely, I mean, they were the Donald Trumps of the world, the ruling class, the royalty. And then you had a very small middle class, the mercantilists, the people who owned the shops, the stores, and the few experts, the physicians and like that. That's what Marley and Scrooge and Marley were. They owned a three-person business. And then you had the vast majority of everybody else, 95% of the rest of the population, the working poor. And that was Bob Cratchit and Tiny Tim, his kid. And he didn't have health insurance, and so he had to beg his employer for health. And, no, you can't have health insurance. Oh, may I have a lump of coal, please, to keep my hands warm? No, you may not. It'll cost an extra pence. And Scrooge was not even the ruling class. He was the middle class. The very small middle class. That's what the conservative vision of America will bring America to. A very small middle class of experts. You'll have, you know, surgeons and senior middle management and a few, you know, technicians who are making the somewhere between $50,000 and $300,000 a year. You know, the broad swath of the middle people making $300,000 a year think they're rich. They don't have a clue. I mean, it's a lot of money. Not putting that down, but I'd like to make that. But the point is, it's not the ruling class. But that's going to be, it's getting smaller and smaller. That the average income in America of $44,000 a year, the median income in America, that is getting smaller and smaller. And what it's being replaced by are people who are making $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 a year. You can hardly live on that. And what does that do? It drives down political activism. And one of the tools that Reagan started with the amnesty in 1986, one of the tools that conservatives have been using to do this is wink, wink, nod, nod with employers saying, oh, you want to hire somebody who's not a citizen? That's fine. It increases the labor pool. It drives down labor costs. Here's an article from the International Herald Tribune. Some experts, Dateline Omaha, Nebraska, another Associated Press piece, some experts say the raids could lead to a shortage of meat packers, higher wages, and higher prices for beef in homes and restaurants. Oh, my God, higher wages? UFCW, they're trying to staff up their plants, and they've been having to raise their wages in the past few weeks. To me, it's an example that when you make the job more attractive, you get a different kind of applicant. Before the raids, roughly 90% of the Greeley plant workers were Hispanic, Duran said. It's unclear that 90% how many were or were not U.S. born. It's not about Hispanics or not Hispanics. It's about the size of the labor pool. It's about busting the middle class. We don't have an illegal alien problem in the United States. We have an illegal employer problem. 27 minutes past the hour.
Paper town, a big company came in, shut one of them down. Seems now all you get is one point of view, and it don't really matter which side you're on, cause nobody wins when our choices are gone. Both sides of a story often lead to the truth. Well, maybe I'm crazy, maybe it's no big deal. It's just my opinion, it's just how I feel. I dream of a world that's not all the same, where freedom is more than a word that we say, where you can say what you think, and no one would dare put you down. I dream of a world that's a two-paper town.
And welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, supporting our sponsors. Please listen to and notice the sponsors for our local affiliates, our local stations, and patronize them. Let them know that you're listening. Buy their products or tell them that you're going to recommend their products to other people, as well as our national sponsors like Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time, all organic, all fair trade, sacredgroundscoffee.com, Small Dog Electronics, the latest iPods, smalldog.com, and the organic wine company, ecowine.com. 35 minutes past the hour. I just want to put a point on this, and then I'm going to go to your phone calls because I notice the board is just totally slammed here. As I said, in my opinion, we do not have an illegal immigration problem. You get these hysterical responses from both the right and the left, frankly. Of, oh, well, we need to, you can't get people who are here illegally to leave. You have to spend billions of dollars. Where are you going to get all the buses? How are you going to deport all these people and identify? You don't need to do that. You throw some employers in prison, people stop hiring people who are not citizens, like they do in Mexico, by the way. And people who are not here legally will leave. Number one. Number two, oh, we need to build a fence. We got to build a wall. No, we don't. Come on. 200 years we've been a country without a fence. We're not going to become East Berlin here. It would be tragic. It would be a disaster. It would be terrible. Not to mention the damage that it would do to wildlife. I mean, we've got the last jaguar population down in Mexico that travels up into the southern part of North America of the United States, among others. It's just not right. It won't work. You know, the old cliche, you build a 12-foot fence, I'll show you a 13-foot ladder. It's true. What we have to understand is this is all about David Ricardo's iron law of labor. Right? It's all about driving down wages, and it's all about conservative Republicans and Democrats, frankly, and their corporate support group. You say, well, you know, we've got to have cheap labor in order to have cheap prices. That's the other. Oh, you got, you know, if you raise wages, you're going to raise prices, and that's going to hurt the middle class. Nonsense. Prices of products, by and large, have very little to do with the cost of labor. I realize that may seem counterintuitive. You go, wait a minute. How can that be? If you've never run a business, it seems to make sense that if wages go up, prices have to go up. But the reality is that the price that you charge in the marketplace is not a function of your labor costs. It is to some small extent, but by and large it's not. The price you charge in the marketplace is what you can get in the marketplace. When Phil Knight at Nike started making his tennis shoes at progressively cheaper and cheaper and cheaper sweatshops over in Southeast Asia, or non-sweatshops now, I guess they're cleaning up their act, did he lower the price of Nikes? I don't think so. You charge what the market will bear. And so, therefore, if you can reduce your labor costs, your price doesn't go down. Your profits go up. It's why the Walton family sitting around, you know, the 5 years of the Walton family in aggregate, the richest in the world, they're right up there with Bill Gates in aggregate, making billions of dollars a year sitting around on their butts around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive, and now paying a maximum tax rate of 15% under Bush's last tax cut that said, no, there's two categories of wage earners in the United States. Those people who work for a living, they pay over 30% maximum income tax, and those people who invest for a living, they pay a maximum 15% income tax. So people like Bush, who was born with a trust fund that he could have lived on for the rest of his life if he had chosen, and did for much of his life, people like Bush, maximum 15% income tax on the money from that trust fund. People like you and me who work for a living, maximum 30-whatever percent it is, 32-33%, whatever the tax rate is right now. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Greg in Danville, California. Hey, Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I'll be quick. I know you've got a lot of callers, but I want to get your take on the story from truthout.org from yesterday about Walmart not being held liable for what happens with their foreign workers and what that really does for globalization in regards to American companies now exporting their labor.
You know, Greg, I'm going to have to get back on you. I didn't read the article. I'm sorry. Okay. So I don't know the details of it.
I went ahead and sent you through your email, and it basically said that they can't be held liable under United States law for labor conditions at some of its overseas suppliers.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. And that's the latest in a long string of precedents. I mean, you know, there have been many attempts over the last 30 years to hold employers to account for sweatshop conditions and, for that matter, slave labor conditions overseas. None of them have been successful.
Okay. Well, because my question, when I read this, I said, well, if they're not responsible, then who is when that happens?
Well, ultimately, you and me, because we allow a legal structure in this country through our elected representatives, which allows that to happen. The way that gets changed is by changing it at law. And the rules of the game of business are determined by legislatures, believe it or not. They're not determined by marketplaces. And we're the ones who decide that. And until there's an outcry from us, they're not going to change it. Greg, thanks for the call. Vicki in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Hey, Vicki.
Hi, Tom. Ooh, I hate to say this now, but I'm a conservative.
Well, that's fine. What does that mean?
Oh, well, because I don't know. I don't Well, I don't know how you could possibly yell at me about it because I agree with almost everything you say.
Well, that, so, then
one of us is confused.
At you anyway. Yeah, there you go. Well, see, that's the problem with these labels. I think that, you know, there are people out there who there are a few issues that are very meaningful to them. For example, they think that abortion should be illegal, or they think that there should not be any control on the right to own guns or things like that. A few, or that it should be illegal to burn a flag. I mean, you pick one of these small wedge issues. And they kind of hang on to that and they say, oh, well, this means I'm a conservative. You know, the real conservative worldview, if you go back and read Russell Kirk's book in 1953, The Conservative Mind, which defined the modern conservative movement. Barry Goldwater refers to it. William F. Buckley refers to it. It's like the Bible of, Town Hall, the website and the magazine and all this kind of thing. You know, he suggests that fundamentally the conservative worldview is that society has classes and orders. There is a ruling class. You have a thin veneer that looks like democracy but isn't, because you can't really trust the rabble, to quote, you know, John Adams, the first conservative president of the United States, the second president of the United States. And that you don't want to have a lot of social mobility. You want to have very little social mobility, so you make it very hard for people to get an education, you know, an advanced education. You make it very expensive. Only the wealthy can send their kids to college. And you don't want to have a large middle class, because a large middle class gets uppity. Look at what happened in the 60s and 70s, the golden age of the American middle class in the United States. The two periods of time in this country when we had a strong middle class were the 1870s and the 1770s and the 1970s. And during those two periods of time, when we had the largest middle classes, we had revolution. And so conservatives say, we don't want that. What we want is, you know, nice, stable, run it by the corporations, have the appearance of democracy.
Well, let me tell you what happened with me when I couldn't associate myself with the Republican mafia, the criminal mafia that's in power now. Mm-hmm. So I was going to join the Democratic Party. And so I joined MoveOn, and naively thinking that they were actually a grassroots organization. But it turns out their agenda is coming top down. You know, they don't listen to their membership on
issues
that are important.
They do surveys on it's actually fairly democratic, because they do these surveys every 2 or 3 months on what do you want us to do, and then they actually do whatever the majority of the people say they want.
Well, they started that after I participated for about a year, and then and then they started doing that, but I was already gone. But I then contacted my local Democratic Party, and I was going to start, you know, working with them, and I was going to write for their website, and so I wrote this commentary on Social Security. This was when the Republicans were going to try and get rid of Social Security. And I submitted it to them. And they wrote me back an email that said that they only work on local issues, and that I could write on things like which street the local Walmart dumps out onto. I didn't know it was an issue in town.
Vicki, what you need to do is run for office and, you know, run for to become one of the members, the governing members of your local Democratic Party.
Well, I'm not really that kind of a public person. I like to write. I don't like to speak to people, but it was very disheartening. And so what I decided, and the truth of the matter is that I hate all those people, the Republicans, the Democrats, I hate them all.
Yeah.
So anyway,
well, I am not registered with either party. Frankly, I support the Democratic Party because I think we can use them to take back America. And I think, you know, frankly, Franklin Roosevelt was a marvelous president, and I'd like to see us coming back to something like that.
Yeah, we need somebody like that. All right, thanks.
Thank you, Vicki. But I think that there's a lot of us out there who are independents. I mean, I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, so what can I say? It was a mistake, but 45 minutes past the hour. I'll be right back.
Now, back to Tom Hartman on the Al Franken Show, here on Air America Radio.
And welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-8466. Peter in San Jose, California. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I like your show. I love your articulation of facts, and that's why I believe you should be very careful linking global warming and CO2 emissions.
Why is that?
Because they...
They seem to track each other.
Pardon?
They seem to track each other. I mean, you go back 600,000
okay, yeah.
years, that's
you
how far back they drilled.
Which is a fact. But,
I beg your pardon?
You don't know whether global warming causes CO2 or CO2 causes global warming. At any rate, let me... One more thing. I think what you're doing is like a Bush war team linking the Iraq war to the weapons of mass destruction. When the truth does come out, and usually does, you lose credibility.
Well, we know that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas. We know that carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas. We know that that from 600,000 years worth of ice drillings in the Greenland core, that when carbon dioxide levels have gone up, the Earth has warmed.
Yeah, but you don't know whether the sun's warming the Earth and causing the carbon dioxide. You get 90 billion units of carbon dioxide from the land and 90 billion units from the water, from the oceans, and about 5 to 10 billion from the anthropogenic.
Well, let's say that it's still debatable. Just for the purposes of discussion, let's say that it's still debatable.
Can
whether
I make one point more?
Sure.
If you do internet search, there's a group that does and has been doing for 20 years CO2 science, and you should try to find them and read what they say, because they're concerned about this urban legend being
Peter, if you do an internet search, you can find a group that will prove to you beyond any shadow of a doubt that George W. Bush is a space alien from the planet Xenon who zips on a human suit every day. Earl in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Daryl.
Hey, how you doing there, Tom? I love your show.
Thank you.
I was calling today to see if you heard about the reported Christmas bonuses given out on Wall Street today.
Yeah, 50, 60 million bucks. Actually, an awful lot of that was given out in London and Hong Kong. That's the part of the story that they didn't report in the New York Times.
But it goes along with what you were talking about, the median income being $44,000 and the people making $300,000 a year thinking that they've reached it.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't seen a significant increase, more than 1% or 2% increase in the real take-home wages, inflation-adjusted take-home wages of American workers since Ronald Reagan came into office.
Right.
I mean, he just put the brakes on it. Our middle class was growing like crazy from the time that Franklin Roosevelt put into place the stimulations of the economy with the CCC and the WPA, the ability of labor to negotiate in 1935 with the Wagner Act, the Social Security Act that provided some safety and stability for people in their old age. All of these protections that were put into place, the middle class grew stronger and stronger and stronger all the way up through the late 1970s. And then Reagan came in and said, no, we can't have this. Look at this middle class, these kids that can go to college for free at the University of California and cheap at land-grant colleges all across the United States, and they're ungrateful. In fact, when he was asked why he did away with free college in California, he said, why should I pay to have somebody protest something I don't believe in? And the reason why is because it creates social mobility, which ensures democracy. But yeah. You know, Reagan never got that.
You need to agitate, and motivate, but you're doing a great job with your show, and I really appreciate the job you're doing.
Well, thank you very much, Earl, and thank you for listening there in Detroit. Ken in Thousand Oaks, California. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind today?
Yes, I think the only language that the powerful understand is power, and it's all well and good to play by Marcus of Queensbury rules, but we're fighting against gutter fighters, and I think the only way we're going to get ahead is to out-rove Karl Rove. I know that it's distasteful and that we don't want to lower ourselves to that level.
It's not a matter of being distasteful, Ken. It's that when you sell out your principles on behalf of principles, you've already lost.
Well, the
we don't need to outrove Karl Rove in dirty tricks and lies and manipulation and stealing voting machines and telling people in districts that if they show up to vote, they're going to be arrested, that kind of stuff. Where we need to outrove Karl Rove is in the effective use of language, which we talk about in the third hour of this show every Friday. We're doing these ongoing lessons in neurolinguistic programming and political communication, number one. And number two, we need to outrove Karl Rove in revealing to people what's really going on and getting the message out. That's the real important thing in my mind. Ken, thanks for weighing in, though. Lawrence in Berkeley, California. Hey, Lawrence.
Yeah, hi. I thought you were going to talk about Iraq when you were talking about the madness of King George.
Well, it's there. It's
okay.
There. Here's an interesting irony for you. We fought a revolution against the third George to rule England.
Yes.
This guy's the third George to be president of the United States.
This is true. But I wanted to say about how we can, in fact, end the Iraq War, what the peace movement and what the progressives in Congress need to do. And that is that we need an entirely new tack. And that is that we have to emphasize the idea of getting the Iraqis themselves to vote in a referendum.
They've already voted three times.
They voted for government. They have not voted up or down, do you want American troops to leave within a year?
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And all, of course, polls say that the last that I saw, that 87% of Iraqis want a scheduled withdrawal.
Right. And over 80% think that it's okay to shoot at Americans.
Yeah. And 90% think that it's now worse than it is under than it was under Saddam.
Right. So let's do a national referendum. I'm all in favor of that.
Yeah. The thing is that the peace movement at the time is kind of treading water. Yeah. We need a new slogan, one that is focused, that will be the equivalent of the nuclear freeze movement in the 80s, which had hundreds of thousands of people in the street.
Yeah, it's a good starting point, Lawrence. It's a good idea. What we really need is just to promote the idea of peace. I mean, let's get back to, we are humans here. Tomorrow, Brunch with Bernie, our regular Friday, first hour of our Friday program, noon Eastern time. Bernie Sanders, now Senator Bernie Sanders, taking your calls for our first hour. Then Brian Fitzpatrick, a conservative, I'll be debating in the second hour. The third hour, the last hour of the day, Cracking the Code, the Art and Science of Political Persuasion. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.